on this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
The labels are very unhelpful. And by the way, back to the pets, your pets, and Maureen, you're more of an expert here than I am at this, but my theory, my supposal, my hypothesis is that pets don't really have labels for humans. They may have a category, and that category is either you're dangerous to me or you're not dangerous to me. It's one of the other. You're dangerous to me. But the label that Scruffy has for me is I'm a human, and I'm a human that is not dangerous to him.
Stay tuned following the interview for On the Couch and Off the Rocker, our special guest's psychocilly analysis by Art Lab's own head cabbager, Dr. Ima Freudknot.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Well, go ahead.
I want to go even past that. They're not categorizing anything. All the dogs are doing, and if I leave you guys with any nugget of today to take from the dogs, is that dogs feel their way through life. And that's all you have to do. Stop thinking your way through life. Start feeling your way through life. If you and I, Dr. Heath, are in a grocery store and you are rude to me, I feel you're not a good match for me and I move on my way. If you and I meet today and we're having fun and I feel this connection and we understand each other, I feel a connection with you and you feel good to me. That is what the dogs do at the dog park. They go and they feel the energy of a dog if they're assertive or aggressive. When you talk about dangerous to me or not dangerous to me, the dog's goals, if you think about it, are, when you were talking about the politics part of it, is alpha, right? And you're either going to be in charge or you're going to be submissive. Well, the problem is, those that are alpha and want to force you to be submissive and you're not a submissive, that's when you have a dog fight. Well, it's the same way in humans. If you have two alpha people unwilling, one to submit or the other one to submit or mutually submit, you've got a fight on social media saying you should kill yourself. It's really about feeling our way through life. When you talked about the toxic people in life, someone had said to me, and I love this, if your wife were to travel, 1,000 miles across the country for a business meeting or to meet family, you would not love her any less. It's like that with toxic people. I am estranged from my daughter and I have to keep her over there, but I don't love her any less. It's just easier and safer and healthier for her to be over there with me loving her than to have her right here, because then we have two alphas trying to make each other submissive. So that's
whatever your listeners' religious beliefs are, that's fine with me. But there is a story that comes to mind, and it is the story of from the Old Testament, and I guess this is Abraham and Lot. I think Lot was Abraham's nephew. And they're traveling in, you Old Testament scholars, I'm not saying this is completely accurate. This is what I recall from the story. It's been a while since I read it. But they're traveling together in this big herd of people. And the quote that comes to my mind is that Abraham says to Lot, let not there be enmity between me and thee, in the King James Version, me and you. And really, they made that decision. They just said, "Hey, we love each other, we respect each other, we value each other, but our relationship dynamics and engineering is going to need to be this way, which means you're going to be over there, and I still love you, respect you. I'll be courteous when we meet each other if we ever do again, and I'm going to be over here." And you know, in relationships, there's nothing wrong with that. As my patient said, You don't have to hold hands and take long walks in the park with everybody. And I'll add something to that. You don't have to hold hands, take long walks in the park with people in order to respect them as other humans, with their own ideas and their own preferences. People kind of have the right to be in their space of life, which is only going to be, what, 67 years to 85 years, something like that. Why can't they live? Why can't Lot live the way he decided to live and Abraham didn't agree with it, and vice versa? And I'm that way. I love my family members, but no, we don't get together daily and hold hands and take long walks in the park. Now, I want to share something with you, Maureen. And Maureen and I, we've been communicating, gosh, I guess it's been a couple of months now. And I just loved everything that I saw in your bio and everything. But this is a relationship, even though we've just kind of gotten started with it. And I think Maureen's such a lovely person, does such wonderful work. But I want to get your take on this, because I tackle this on social media. My whole thing is cognitive science. And here's what we teach about the toxicity thing. We first engineer our thoughts, and then our thoughts engineer our lives. And the word toxic, as I share with my clinicians and clients, is something that is harmful to you just by it being in your presence, poisonous to you. If radiation can be toxic because it can kill you. Paint fumes. I walked in this building when we were still working on it, and my painter was in here. It was full of fumes, and the guy didn't have a mask on. Ooh. I said, "Hey, you want a mask? Because these fumes are toxic, meaning they can cause brain damage." And he said, "No, I've been doing this for 30 years. I never wear a mask." And I looked at his work and I thought, wow, that's probably why it has so many drips and sags and everything. You know, you've breathed all these toxic fumes for years. But I don't really have any power against radiation being toxic to me. It just is. I could put on a radiation suit. I don't have any power against the level of toxicity of paint fumes, but I can put on a mask and still be in the presence of paint fumes, a radioactive suit, still be in the presence of radioactivity. And here's why we tell people that's important. Because and this is what I want your take on it, if I tell myself this person is toxic to me, I think I'm really giving them power over me that I don't want to give them. Because I'm saying, you have the power to hurt me, and I don't think you do. I don't think that this person does. I think that I can decide to think what I'm going to think about the words coming out of their mouth. They may call me a doo-doo head. Is that toxic? Well, no, because I know I'm not. Or actually, sometimes I can be. If they say that you're stupid and ignorant and you should kill yourself, is that toxic to me? Well, I don't think so, because I get to decide how I'm going to think about it. They can't implant those thoughts in my mind. And so the problem I see with the calling other people toxic is that type of external locus of control thinking I view as disempowering to me. I don't know, what are your thoughts? You don't have to agree, but what are your thoughts about that?
No, I love that you say that, because there's a lot of these buzzwords going around today in the mental health, you know, wellness world. And I try to mix it up and put a different spin on it. So I don't think the saying that it's toxic to me, because in my book, even I say you got to have a heart guard. So imagine a shield around your heart.
I love that.
I can say that person has toxic traits, or they have unhealthy ways that don't serve me, but I'm okay because I'm protected. Like you said, if I've got a mask on, the paint's not going to hurt me. Or, you know, if there's radiation, I can put on a radiation suit. But it's a determination in my mind of how much do I want to be around it? Do I want to have to wear a mask every single time I'm around this person?
Yes.
Or would it be better for me to just be over there and just observe? But I think that's the thing we've really need to work on, is deciding who's allowed to be in our presence.
And yeah, you know, as it comes to mind, I have a app on my phone. I think it's called Decibel. And it has taught me that if you expose your ears to a certain high decibel level that it can be harmful to your ears. In other words, not serve your eardrums, your auditory system well. And I think maybe that could be the case, that you really kind of, you need to decide how much you're going to expose yourself to this person, that person, the other person. I usually use the example of exercise or running. I've done that for 35 years, and so I could probably outrun or out exercise a lot of people. So it may not be healthy for them to exercise as much as I do or run as far, because they've not developed the resilience to do that. But yeah. I think that with other people, you can finally develop such a high level of resilience that, goodness, folks, you could be around anybody. And I use the example of Viktor Frankl, who was in a Nazi concentration camp and was still a very resilient person and came out of it a very resilient person. Now imagine, if we want to use the word toxicity about people, how toxic those Nazi guards were with guns, who were slaughtering Jewish people in gas chambers. But Viktor Frankl, well, how would you escape from that? There's no, you're in a prisoner, you're in a concentration camp, there's barbed wire. Which is another point I wanted to make about the toxicity thing, is it may be fine and good if you can get away from it, but right. What if you have a job and you really can't get another job? You really can't remove yourself. I think the only choice you have is what Maureen is recommending with her heart guard, which I would say, would you call that resilience, developing a resilience, that heart guard? Is that a type of resilience?
Oh, absolutely. And I think if you can't physically get away from someone, you have the choice to always mentally get away from them. So no matter, if I'm in the middle of a crowd in a concert and there's someone right here next to me screaming and obnoxious and spilling their beer on me, I have a choice to mentally ignore that. And that's where I tell you about Marie, criticize, give us criticism. Nope, not doing it, because I choose not to focus on that thing. And if you're in an environment that feels really oppressive, I would disagree with Dr. Heath. So sorry, but you
that's okay.
Do not. You do have a choice. You always have a choice. And if you're going to be like the dogs, feel your way through. And if you're feeling that people in your surroundings are not serving you and uplifting you, or your job isn't uplifting you and purposeful and passionate, you're in the wrong place. Then you have a choice. Stay there and have to really be resilient and every day put that dang, you know, radiation suit on, or decide I'm going to go to a park and take that radiation suit off and I'm just going to smell the flowers and feel the clean air. You have a choice to mentally leave or physically leave, but you know what you feel like the dogs.
Let's talk about the mental mental techniques. How would you do that mentally?
So I do this thing, and it's you guys might laugh at me, listeners, but it's called the Yabbit Rabbit. So when you hear something critical, or you see someone in your presence, or you hear things like on your response from the person who is negative on social media, I'll look at something negative and then I'll go, yeah, but. So your Yabbit Rabbit is, yeah, but they probably are triggered by something bad happened in their life, and I said something that upset them. And that's their perception. Or, you know, this person, I'll give you an example. I was a supervisor at one point. I had 50 plus employees, and it was just like so much negativity. And there were a couple of women that just always were so negative. I came up with a compliment box as opposed to a complaint box. That's how I am. That's why I say it's not in my soul to criticize, but there were these two women that just were, they were causing problems in the other employees. They were just negative. They came in my office and complained. And they'd come in and say, this is going on. And I'd say, yeah, but what's a solution for that? Or, yeah, but what do you think I should do about that? And I'm putting the responsibility and accountability back on that. Or if they'd say something negative, in my mind, I would go, Yeah, but work is all they have. They go home and they really don't have their families. They're distanced from their family. And so I would find a way to have compassion instead of a reaction. And I can reframe anything to an understanding. And I love what Dr. He said before we started. He said, let me put on a different pair of glasses. He said, these are my reading the computer glasses, and then these are my podcasting glasses. Well, if you look at life as if we're all looking at a different pair of glasses, we all have a different prescription, it's the same thing as we all have a different perception. So you're never going to see the same thing I see out of my glasses, and I'll never see what you see. And that is how we as humans need to interact, by saying, but they have a different pair of glasses. They have a different view. So why can't I be more understanding of that, rather than asserting that, Dr. Heath, you need to put my glasses on and you need to see things the way I see it.
That is so fantastic. And you called it Yeah, But Rabbit. That is so fantastic. Thank you. You know, as you say that, getting back to our pets, I think my dog does that. I think Scruffy does that, because the other day, and I'm a big guy, but I'm a big teddy bear. I try to be very gentle and everything. And I picked him up and I'll cradle him like this when he comes in from getting his feet messy outside. And I have a little wipey. I wipe the muddy paws off. And I really don't know what I did, but he yelped. Mm-hmm. He yelped. He's 14 and a half years old. He probably has arthritis or something. And he yelped. But you know what he didn't do? He didn't jump out of my arms. He didn't bite me. And I never thought of this, and thank you for that, Maureen. I think he did the Yabbit Rabbit technique, and it went something like this. That just hurt, but this is my dad, and he's a non-harmful human to me. That hurt, yeah, but he didn't mean it, and I didn't.
Yeah.
My dog is using this technique. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think to go expand on that, it's trust. And trust is a big thing. When I was writing the relationship book, I did a little survey and I asked people, in a relationship, what's the most important thing to you? And 99% said trust. And someone said respect. And I love that, trust and respect. But very few people said love was number one. So that was really important. Think about the dogs in the shelters. Some of them have gone to fosters, and some of them have gone back into, the shelters, and then they get a chance with a family. That family doesn't want them. Think about our pets and how much trust that they give. Every person gets a clean slate with a dog. Every person gets a new clean slate. They're not blaming the next owner that takes them home for the owner before them. Now, may they have behavioral, maybe skittish or shaking? Yes, but that's conditioned. But think about your dog. In my book, I talk about when I would take Brody to the groomer. I can't explain to him, and I felt so bad. When I take him to the groomer and I put that leash on, he's like, cool, we're going for a walk. We're going to the park. And I can't say, no, you're going to be at the groomers and you're going to be in a crate and you're going to get a bath. And I'm so sorry, but I will be back for you. And we get to the groomer and I bring him in and he stops and lays down. And I'm like, oh, buddy, come on. And I hand him over to a stranger. And he trusts that I'm doing what's best for him. And I can't tell him I'll be back. He doesn't know if I'm dropping him off at a shelter to never return again. You talk about blind trust. That is what the dogs are. And we as humans are the opposite. I trust no one, right? A lot of people, I don't trust anybody because so many people have done me wrong. But if we take a little bit of a more open approach the way the dogs do and just give everyone a chance, then think of how different the world would look.
Oh, I completely agree. And another thing, Scruffy hates leaving home. He takes after his dad there, because I'm not a big fan of leaving home. Everything I need is really right here, and Amazon brings the rest. But also, when Scruffy goes to the groomer, which he doesn't like, now he doesn't like it, He views that as dangerous to him. And based on that thought process, and yes, dogs have thought processes, he experiences anxiety. But here's what he doesn't do. He doesn't come back and punish me for that. He doesn't come back and bite me because I sent him to the groomer or the vet. He just doesn't like going anywhere. I could take him for an ice cream cone. He wouldn't like that either. But he doesn't come home and punish me for that difficult event, situation, circumstance. And I think we humans could be more about that, is go ahead and fully embrace those difficult emotions. And you don't got to punish somebody because you're angry. You don't got to punish somebody because you're anxious. I had somebody on social media tell me we were having a debate about panic. And I don't use the term panic attack because I don't think that panic is an attack, or Vladimir Putin would be using it against Ukraine and winning. There's nothing attacking me. It's a difficult emotion. There's no bombs or hand grenades. It's just anxiety amplified. And I've struggled with that relationship since the mid-80s. But the thing about it is I can have panic or anxiety or even anger, and I don't got to punish other people for it. I can say to my wife, she'll say, well, you're irritated. And I can say, you know, yes, I am, but it's not about you. And we had the discussion one time. I actually said this out loud. I said, you know, honey, I said, just think about this. Are you really expecting me to go through the next 50 years of my life and never experience a very human emotion called irritation? Because I just tell you, that's not likely. It's just not going to happen unless you keep me really drugged up. Or anxiety or panic or even anger. And I said, but if you're, I said, I'm putting in these light bulbs here, and it's the whole mechanism of the light fixtures we have in our bathroom. They're not simple. And I'm frustrated, a little bit angry, but that's not about you. But if you're uncomfortable in this space with me while I'm experiencing my own anger, then you can go to a different room. But it's not about you. Here's what's going to happen. Me being angry motivates me to figure out a better way to put in light bulbs so I catastrophize less and I'm therefore less angry. And I can do that all on my lonesome, you know. And she did. She went to a different room and I got the darn things changed, and hopefully they stay changed for a while. And all was copacetic. But I can, like Scruffy, I can experience my own emotions and not blame or punish anybody else for it. They just belong to me, and they're okay. They don't cause cancer. Maureen, let me ask you, what would be one of your favorite? Let me ask. We started out with dating. Let me ask this: what's a way that somebody could maybe improve their dating life by letting their pet coach them?
Oh, I love that. I love that question. The way to really hone in on attracting, and this is the funny thing in the dating world, is I've got to find someone. No, you don't. You got to attract someone. And the way that you attract someone is being your best self and doing for you first. So I do my speaking, my motivational speaking, and I'm going to do a TED talk on how to be your own best friend, the one that your furry baby already knows you are. And what is it that you, when you become your best self, you attract the exact same person that you're looking for. Here's the problem. We go out into the dating world, and this is like back to the dog park social thing with the dogs. And we go out and we kind of take what's given to us. Oh, you know, we're online dating and this guy's not really my type. I don't really like what he does for a living or whatever. And we go on that date anyway. And we sit across from that person and we're doing this checklist in our head. Check, no check, check, no check. And you're, as I tell the women, you're wasting your makeup. Like, don't go out and spend energy on something that you already know doesn't fit. The dogs have a type in the park. Like I said, Jade has this Jade has this type, and she knows what she likes. And if there's a puppy, she's an old girl. She's, you know, eight. Well, she's eight, but she's acts like an old girl. And if a puppy comes up and is super energetic and she's like, get the heck away. And she runs in circles away from him. And I think in the dating world, we do that. We go out on these dates and then the guy keeps, you know, asking us out. And we're like, well, I didn't really feel him on the first date, but okay, maybe I'll give him another chance. And then the second date, you're like, I don't know if everything's there. Let me try a third date. This is what we do wrong in the dating world that our dogs give us advice on. It's set that bar. Make that list. With my clients, we create an avatar of what exactly do you want? And I don't mean, 5'10", brown eyes and blonde hair. I'm saying, what do you want for the perfect match to your soul going forward as a partner in life? And be specific. He needs to not want kids. He wants to want kids. He has to, pull my hair back if I'm vomiting when I have the flu. I mean, really specific, right? This is where we make the mistake and we find these partners that are not good matches, and maybe it'll last for 3 years, maybe not, but it's being determined to follow and feel your way through. And
do you think that you can set too many criteria and overly limit your choices?
I do in the way that when I met my husband, and you're going to laugh, I almost sabotaged it. So everybody I had been with had been like 6 foot tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. Every relationship had sort of the same physical dynamic. And I met my husband online. We talked for about 4 months, and I would not go on this date because I was like, I'm just looking for friends and I'm healing from all this stuff. Finally went on a date. And when I showed up and we went on the first date, I walked in. And first thing I said was, I thought you'd be taller. And I said, And I said, I think you should update your picture on your profile because you look a lot older in person. What? What was I doing? And you know what? He didn't bat an eye. He was like, yeah, probably should do that. Well, guess what? It wasn't the physical thing. It was his confidence that then I was like, oh, wow, that is so attractive. Like, he wasn't upset. He wasn't going to gaslight me. Oh, but you're a lot chunkier than you look online. Or it was really cool. So don't stay so boxed in on your physical demands. But I have to say this. A lot of people will let the financial go, and I don't think you should do that. I think you should say, I need someone to meet me at the place that I am at financially, bring the same thing to the table or more.
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
The Therapy Bites podcast is HIPAA compliant. No identifying patient information will be disclosed by Therapy Bites podcast hosts or Therapy Bites podcast guests without permission from patients or guardians. All personal stories are de-identified in order to comply with HIPAA, the NASW Code of Ethics, and the Ethical Principles of Psychologists and Code of Conduct. Fresh from the therapy couch and from the deep dark recesses, stories may involve exploding preconceived notions and topics uncomfortable to underthinkers and small farm animals. Audience discretion and duct taping your head for safety is advised. Concrete-headed Kool-Aid drinking humans assume all risks associated with any possibility of choking to death on the accurate, realistic thoughts presented in the art lab. This is natural selection, and Therapy Bites podcast management and hosts are not responsible.
Hey, T-Balders, welcome to this episode of Fresh from the Therapy Couch, where we share stories of hurting, helping, and healing. Real-life stories from real-life humans, hoping their message can be a message you'll use to improve your own lives and possibly maneuver around the mistakes they made. Sally and Tom had a history of habitually spouting impulsive, rude comments toward each other, even elevating their volumes into what most would call yelling, but which they had become sadly accustomed to. Each time they attempted to draw close, the memories of past wrongs floated to the surface of their awareness like flotsam on a sea of regret. They interpreted the resulting disgust as something they could never overcome. but with some time in the art lab, they recognized the value of this disgust. Instead of being something that was a gulf between them or a gulf separating them, it could be restructured and interpreted as a reminder to not return to those old dysfunctional behavioral choices and the distorted thoughts that led them there. They engage in two very workable relation building strategies from this point forward. Number one, they begin to view the disgust as a lighthouse warning them away from the rocky coasts of unhealthy behavior and unhealthy communication directed at the other. And number two, they began to redefine that disgust over past unhealthy behavior as an opportunity to hold on, cling to each other more tightly. How about redefining those old dusty memories in your brains as opportunities to think and behave differently to those you love? You don't have to let your brain's ability to recall unkind words of the past sabotage relationships of the present.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
Welcome to the Therapy Bites Art Lab Library, where we have pored over thousands of volumes to bring you the latest Couch Crumbs quote. Oh, would you like a napkin? You're getting crumbs in the book.
That okay. Me eat book.
Oh. And now today's Couch Crumbs quote.
Disgust over shallow things in a relationship is the enemy of deeper things in a relationship. Psylocke Holmes here with your Doc Heath Couch Crumbs quote. It's elementary.
Oh, you got crumbs on the couch. Extra points for you.
Show your T-Ball Team spirit and buy your hard-working Art Lab team a cup of coffee, which helps fuel purchases of high-octane equipment and T-Ball tech that get poured back into percolating, highly caffeinated content for you. Just go to buymeacoffee.com and search Therapy Bites.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball Team.
Okay, Maureen, I wanted to get to those acronyms, and I did my training at the VA, and the VA is just drowning. The government in general is just drowning in acronyms, but to the field of psychology is too. But some of these are my favorite acronyms, and you can stop me and jump in. But you have some certifications and trainings in NLP, and guys, that stands for Neuro, as in neuron, linguistic, as in words, and programming, NLP, DBT, which is really a ancient philosophy term, dialectical. That's probably where Marsha Linehan got that. Dialectical, as in having a dialect, a back and forth conversation. Dialectical behavioral therapy, REBT, one of my favorite all-time cranks in the field of psychology, engineered that, rational emotive behavioral therapy. And that was Albert Ellis. And he had all kinds of cool terms, some of which I use quite often, such as telling yourself it must be this way, it must be that way, it must be that other way, which he, of course, called, and this is a clean show, but I'm just kind of making fun, but he did use this term, masturbating. You're masturbating. And should. You should do this, and you should do that. He called that shouldn't all over yourself. Get it? You're shouldn't all over yourself. Stephen Hayes, acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT. And I've got a story. I hope to not forget that story. And I made these up, LC and PP, which is LC for life coaching And then PP, gosh, and all of a sudden I forgot what that was. Pet philosophy, maybe, or something like that. I just love acronyms. I've got all kinds of acronyms. But how did you get into all that?
I'm so happy that you asked that. And the PP is pet psychology.
Oh, yes. And thank you.
You know, it's interesting. When I decided to do the business of life coaching, first of all, everybody in my life has said, you've been doing this since like day one. My high school friends on Facebook are like, well, of course you're a life coach. I didn't realize I'd been doing it forever. But when I really, really got that healing and that soul journey over and I recognized the things that I had fixed and how I can help others. In other words, my mantra is be the voice my younger self needed. And that's how I go out into the world and coach. And so when I wanted to start the business, you know, you have those, that inner dialogue of, oh, I don't know. Are people going to think I know what I'm talking about? Am I good enough? Do I have enough? And so I knew I had the life experience, but my self-esteem was like, you need to have also the credentialing. And what I found was I became this sponge of teach me everything there is to know about psychology based on A, my life experience, and now B, what's been studied and the reasoning behind it. And I'm currently getting my diploma in modern applied psychology, which I adore. And of those acronyms, my favorite is the ACT, the acceptance and commitment therapy, because finally it was psychology meets mindfulness. And I look back at my life and my podcast is I Never Knew But My Dog Did podcast. And I realized that that the things that I didn't understand that the dogs taught me were this mindfulness thing about being present. And I wasn't supposed to go to college for 4 years and learn psychology. That wasn't my path because I was more apt to do the mindfulness integration for everyone. And that's why my coaching is, I have 100% success. And I loved the ACT when I came across it. And now the modern applied psychology it's everything. Cause you were mentioning it's a lot of philosophy and it's a lot of practical, just helping people dig into what they want to dig into.
Yeah. Yeah. And those of you that are listening, you can't see what I popped up on the screen, but it's my own little creation graphic called a psyche, P-S-Y-K-E-Y, a psyche. I put it out there because, Maureen was talking about some things that are just key, you know, it's all about the language that you use to tell yourself, you know, really language, the NLP language is really the paintbrush of your mind. It really paints a whole reality for you. And that's why we created this little psyche thing there that you can look if you see this on YouTube. Well, let's go to the ACT since you mentioned that. And that's one. There's one of my favorite stories that illustrates the differences in us and our pets. And Stephen Hayes told this story, and I'm sure he tells a lot better than I do, but I'll kind of encapsulate it and truncate it. But imagine you and your pet on a day not unlike to go out for a long walk or maybe a short walk, and you see a pond, and it's a pond that you can cross, and you cross many, many times. But on this occasion, the ice breaks, and you fall through the ice. Well, goodness, that is a survival situation, and your fight, flight, or no pun intended, freeze response takes over, and you're really fighting for your life. You're trying to get out, and so is your dog. You and your puppy dog after walking, you fall through the ice, and you're both fighting for your survival, having fallen through the ice. You're both doing the same thing. You're fighting for survival. You're breathing hard. Your body has shuttled a lot of blood to your heart with which to fuel your muscles, with which to save your life. And you might even experience, since this is a real threat to you, some anger at that ice. I've got to get a hold of purchase on this ice. And then you get out and you're both cold and you're wet and you may be a little bit irritated. And then you go home. You get through the door, you sit by the warm fire, and listen closely, listeners, because here's where there's a divergence, a separation between your experience and your pet's experience. you will sit there and be thinking, oh my goodness, I could have died. I better start avoiding that pond in the future. You know, now that you mention it, I should stop going outside at wintertime, period, and just stay in the house until summer. And oh my goodness, you know, I am so traumatized. I'll just never get over this. And I'll need therapy the rest of my life. And as Hayes points out, what is your dog doing? Your dog is sitting by the fire thinking, oh, that fire feels so good. That's your dog's entire experience, because your dog's not laying, overlaying on all this other stuff on that experience. They're just in the moment. And that's Stephen Hayes' whole point, is you're just in the moment. You're not back in the hold in the ice. You're at home in front of the fire. You're now in the moment. Have you heard that story before?
I haven't, and I'm just enjoying the heck out of it, because you're absolutely right that our dogs are the most mindful creatures, you know, on the planet. And let's go a little further and think about this, that most of the issues and struggles that we have in our lives come from past experiences. And whether it's depression or anxiety, so depression is, I'm reliving the past and these things that happened to me, and it's really bothering me today. Anxiety is, I heard about this thing and I'm scared to go do this thing tomorrow. And your dog is like, whew, I'm cool sitting here by the fire with my person and I'm not worried about anything else. There's no remembrance of 5 minutes ago. There's no there's no grudges, there's no regrets. In fact, a title in my book is No Regrets. If you've ever seen Bad if you've ever seen the Bad Tattoos, people put
No
Regrets.
I love that commercial, No Regrets.
So I put that in my book as one of the chapters, because dogs don't have regrets and dogs don't hold grudges. And I just love that story. And that's where psychology meets acceptance, is, do I determine and choose that I'm going to let what happened 5 minutes ago or 5 years ago or 15 years ago affect this moment of time in my life that holds me back from all those things that I want to do? Or do I also let that fear, anxiety, stop me from doing the things going forward? You're going to stay stuck eternally when you stay in the past. And I love that story.
Thank you. And I put up on the screen, guys, our very own fortune-telling gnat. And that stands for negative automatic thought. And it's a gnat, an actual gnat, holding a crystal ball. And dogs don't have crystal balls. They don't sit around and focus on what maybe, kind of, sort of, could happen in the future, because they're always in the moment. But humans do that, and it's not a bad thing. It's kind of a tool. Though philosophers will say the biggest thing that separates us from animals, the rest of the animal kingdom, is we're able to entertain a thought without engaging in the behavior. And that's great. I can sit around and think about how to build a pool or build a podcast or write a book or do a podcast episode. I can create that in my mind, but that doesn't make it real. The problem gets to be when, after you've fallen in the ice, you go home and you continue to create falling in the ice over and over and over again, as if it is destined to happen in the future. And then that thought process becomes the present. And as I like to point out, one of my friends in the mindfulness segment genre tells me, if you keep on missing the moment, sooner or later you've missed the whole day. And if you keep on missing your day, you'll wind up missing your week and your month and eventually your whole life, because you've never lived in the present. You're always focused on what could happen and what might happen. Well,
yes.
What are some things personally for you, Maureen, and we'll get down to, before we end the episode today, the some brass tacks, as my dad would say, because I want our listeners to know that you do coaching, but you're still human. And I do coaching, but I'm still human. I don't have it all figured out. I work on figuring it out every day. And I told you a story about Scruffy earlier that he has a set bedtime to be in the doghouse, the bedroom, which is our bedroom, and that's about 5:30 or 6, and we have to go to the bedroom. But there's a punchline, so to speak, there that I'll come back to after I ask Maureen this question. What's something that your pets have needed to teach you personally?
Oh, this is a big one. So I have an acronym that I use in my speeches and in my coaching, and the acronym is BONE. Very appropriate. and this is what they've taught me. B is for bravery, and it's taking that fear, putting that aside and saying, I'm going to try something new every day. I'm going to take a step and do something I've never done before, because my dogs go out into the yard. It's the same yard they've been in every single day for however many years they've lived with me. And they're brave. No matter what's going on or we go to the dog park, they're brave enough to face whatever is going to come across for that day. Oh, this is really important. is observant. And I think we get in this Sonder, I guess my husband would call it, you're inside your bubble and you're so busy with my life, and I'm focused on what I'm doing. And we stop looking around us and being observant. And that's, again, with the dogs. They go out into that yard every day observing different things, a new bug, a new rock, a new leaf, anything. They're still looking around at everything that's going on. They bark at anything. I always say when a bug farts, they bark, but it's it's because they're observant. And then N is necessity. And I think I've learned the importance of self-care and the importance of, and that's a buzzword in the health, in the wellness field now, but not the self-care is more than just, you know, going to a spa or doing a meditation. It's checking in with myself. So my self-care is, how are you feeling today? And like today was a super busy day. And I said, okay, for 30 minutes, I'm going to just regroup and I'm just going to sit down and do something I love. So the necessity of checking in with yourself and doing things that you love and quit hustling and being so busy. Don't be a human doing, be a human being. And then last is expectant. And I'm going to paraphrase. Well, I'm going to sort of quote this. We as humans have so many expectations, and expectations are the ruler of disappointment, because you're always going to expect something to go the way that you want. And life inevitably will not go the way you want. People will not say, do, be, or have the things that you want to make you happy. So change expectations to expectant. So, for instance, I use an example. My puppy Brody, who passed away in December, he did not like fireworks. He didn't like loud noises. You name it. He was a scaredy cat, big 80 pound Aussie, scared of his shadow. We had a bug zapper right by the door because we get mosquitoes when it's really hot out here in Arizona during monsoon. And so he would come out the patio door knowing that bug zapper was there, and he hates it, but he would still come out and he would just walk the long way around it because he expected to be safe. Because he knew, even though I don't like this thing, I'm still going to go out there and be expected that I'm going to be okay. And I think that's a really pertinent thing, to go out in life and do things that scare us, but then make sure your mind says, I expect it to go well for me. Instead of saying, I expect this person to do this or this experience to go exactly this way, just say, I expect things to always work out for me. I'm expectant that it's going to be a good day today when I wake up. If I had a bad day yesterday, today, I'm expectant it's going to be a good day. So that's my BONE acronym, and that's what they've taught me.
Well, and which one was the best teacher so far, do you think?
Bravery.
I'm sorry, which pet? Was the most talented teacher?
That's like asking you to pick a favorite child. Like,
I kind of expected that. I really did. It would be a hard choice, wouldn't it?
They're so different. They're like children and they have different personalities. So since Brody has passed, Brody was the calmer. Brody was the old guy who was just a peaceful presence. And he wasn't very affectionate. He didn't lick. He didn't like to lay with you. But he was a peaceful presence that I'm always here by you and I'm always going to protect you. He'd lie between the bed and the door. Mm-hmm. So he always made sure if someone came in, he was taking care of me. Jade is just the nurturer. She's just the, I need to be touching you. She's super affectionate. She's like, I got to be near you, Mom. Whatever you're doing, I need to be near you. I got to be in the bathroom. When I go to the restroom and I'm on the toilet, she literally has to get both paws on both of my knees and like, are you good? Everything going okay here? And I'm like, it's just the bathroom. Can I have 2 minutes? And now we've adopted my daughter's dog, who we thought was a border collie, is actually an Australian Shepherd border collie. And she's the derpy one of the crew. She does the silliest things. She's so unapologetically herself. And she'll lay on the couch sprawled out and she likes to have a pillow between her knees like I do. And she's upside down and she doesn't know she's that big, but she's just funny. She'll put a ball in the pool or a toy in the pool and watch it and see if it floats or sinks. Like, it's just her way. Wow. And yeah, so
she's a canine scientist. She's doing experiments with the pool and the balls.
Yeah, and she's expectant that we'll get it out if it does sink.
Oh, I see. Well, the rest of my story about Scruffy, my personal pet story, is that I have a supposal that it may not be Scruffy that needs to go to the bedroom at 5:30 or 6. It may be me that needs to go to the bedroom at 5:30 or 6, and Scruffy knows that. He's just trying to get me to do what's good for me because he knows I get up early and I work long and hard and fast and a lot and put in lots of hours. And I will routinely work till midnight. But that's after he's in bed asleep, by the way. I'll get up and go back to work to do some of this stuff. But perhaps our pets are here as almost kind of guiding angels to help us do what's really best for us anyway. And in our household, that is be in the bedroom around 5 or 5:30, eating your dinner, watching a TV show with a family, talking, communicating, relaxing, because there's always time for work, but sometimes we don't give ourselves enough time to play. And that's the other thing that Scruffy teaches me. Because he will look at me and look at the bed and look at me and look at the bed and look at me and look at the bed. And that really means I want you to put me on the bed, Dad, and play with me. And I'll cover him up with blankets and scruff him up and everything. And he'll bark and stick his rear end up in there and wag his tail. And I'll have to say probably the playtime does at least as much good for me, if not more good for me, than it does for him. And I think he knows that.
I love it. So what I would call our dogs are accountability partners in the necessities, because they do. They let us know what's necessary. It's time to eat. It's time to sit down. It's time to play, get some energy out. It's time to go for a walk, get some physical energy out. It's time to laugh. I mean, my little derpy Callie, you know, Aussie, she's like, you need to laugh. And I will. I'll be having this day where it's like, oh, so stressed out, and she'll do something so funny, and I'll look at her and go, I needed that. Thank you for that. And yeah, they're the best in being those accountability partners for it. They know more about us than we know about us.
They do. I had a patient that had a really big dog and a standard poodle, and referred to him often as a wise old soul. And I think that's right. I think Scruffy is a wise old soul that hasn't forgotten how to play. Guys, we've talked about all kinds of things today, about how important your pets are as life coaches, and we thank Maureen for being here with us. Before we let her go, we have just a couple more things. And what is your favorite secret pet-inspired relationship hack? I know there's lots of them, but pick your favorite.
T-ballers, time to quit your lollygagging. Get out of the dugout, onto the field, and live the art life.
Oh, my pet-inspired relationship hack is the fun. Is the fun that I tell couples all the time. You when you first started dating, you're trying to impress each other and you're out there like having these unique dates and you're like doing axe throwing and, you know, you're trying to impress each other and have fun. You're goofy golfing. And then you get in these committed relationships and you're like, blah, blah, blah. We're going to a movie and dinner and we're going to I've actually had my couples where I'm like, you're going to schedule sex. Sorry, but you're not doing it. I'm doing it for you. And that's the hack, is where's your childlike fun adventure? So in my book, The Relationship Coach, My Dog is My Relationship Coach, I have dating ideas. One of my fun dating ideas that I think you're going to love, and I think, Dr. Heath, this is for you because you need to get out. You need to get out. I'm a homebody like you. I have a 5-mile radius, and not very often I go out, and I'll tell my husband after I go out, I come back, and I'm like, it's too peoply out there. I gotta get back in my cave. But one of the fun dating ideas that I have for couples is like go to a thrift store. If you guys have those secondhand stores, or I don't want to promote anyone in specific, but one starts with a G. But you know, you go and you have a theme, and you say, okay, our theme is clowns. And you can go find an object that's like the weirdest, craziest looking clown, or you can find an outfit you put together and look like a clown, or find a wig. It's being creative. Have a date jar that you have to do. And there's only a stipulation if health and weather do not permit, but otherwise be committed to having fun. You commit to everything else in your life. Have fun. That's what the dogs teach me.
That's amazing. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, you don't have to teach a dog how to play, and you don't have to teach kids how to play. But I think as adults, we need to teach ourselves how to remember to play, because we forget. We forget. Yep. And you guys, if you want to hear more from Maureen, you can go to www.lifecoachmaureen.com. And if life coach is easy, but Maureen is M-A-U-R-E-E-N. And we'll drop that in the show notes. All you got to do is go to your favorite pod player, and we'll have that up on the show notes. You can book a session right on the website. Her books are available at Amazon, Barnes, and Noble. And one I've actually not heard of, Outskirts Press. Let's see. She has a media kit if you want her for a speaking engagement. And one more thing, Maureen, and I always do this and kind of drop it on people, but I'm going to change cameras here for the effect, because we say this is Therapy Bites Art Lab, and we're taking a bite out of therapy, but we also go deep under the dark recesses of the therapy couch, and we challenge some things, but we also like to ask weird, funny, Freudian-like questions. So here we go.
We journey now with Doc Heath, as he submerges with our special guest into the depths beneath the dark recesses of the therapy couch.
And we'll pull Maureen's out for the day and see what she thinks about this question. It's one of those where there's really no wrong answers, because it's kind of a personal question. And here we go. What furry critters do you dream about? And what do you think that means? What do you decide that means? We all have dreams. Do you call any furry critter dreams? And if so, what are they? And what do you think it means?
Ooh, look at you. I thought you were going to pull out an ink blot, but this is pretty close. I'm so boring. I mean, this is like things Captain Obvious, but obviously the dogs.
Okay.
You know, and
any sort, any kind of dog in particular?
Mainly my dogs, obviously.
Okay. You actually dream about your dogs, not someone else's dogs. I would guess your dogs may be jealous if you let them know you're dreaming of other dogs.
I would imagine so. And I truly believe that my mind, with my focus issues, is so busy during the day that I miss some of the intuition that we get to push us forward. So I'm always looking for my intuition to tell me what's next, Maureen. What are you going to do the book on next book? Or and so I think they visit me in my dreams, and particularly now that Brody has passed, I have seen him in my dreams, and I have communicated with him in my dreams, which is really cool. I'm also a spirit guide medium. So I do readings where you can connect to the spirit world with your loved ones and your spirit guides. So to me, it's like, obviously Brody would visit me there because he's no longer physically here. And he has reassured me that he knew I loved him, and the way that he passed was his choice. And so, yeah.
Do you think that all dogs go to heaven?
My spiritual beliefs is not that there is just a place, but it's just we are continuous, infinite spiritual beings. And so, yes, every creature, every soul will meet again, and we all elevate to where we were before we came.
You know, I want to add one last thing. I didn't intend on saying this, but since you brought that up, I teach this about family members, and I think this about my dad, who was killed in a work-related accident many years ago, is that if you know where something is, then you've not lost it. And since I know where my dad is, I never lost him. And since I know where my dog Muffin, who is a big 140-pound lab that we rescued from a shelter, since I think I know where he is, and Lucy, who is just a stray that wandered up, and a collie, kind of a, I don't know, a conglomeration of all kinds of dogs, but basically a collie. Since I know where Muffin and my cat Igor that I had for 18 years, Igor, big shout out to Igor if you're listening, a jet black cat that really freaked a lot of people out. If you know where something is, you've not lost it. So just for me, you guys can think what you want. If I know where these loved ones are, I would never say that I lost them, because how can you lose something if you know where it is? Maureen, thank you so much for joining us today. We're so proud to have had you on the show. And you T-Ballers, we thank you for joining the show too. Go and grab some of Maureen's information on the show notes there. We'll be posting that along with her website, and catch us for the next Therapy Bites Art Lab. And thank you for joining, Maureen. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, guys. Thank you for listening.
Guest analyst Dr. Jung A. Todd reporting for Art Lab psychomological couch duty for Dr. Freudnut. On sabbatical, being psycho-COVID allies. Cold noses consultant Maureen Scanlon's PMS performance places her in the 96th percentile on the PMS's FLS, Furry Love Scale. This indicates a fantastical degree of four-legged fascination in Maureen's cortical crevices, and a fantastical preponderance toward the perspicuously pop-footed. Overall, Miss Scanlon's PMS's psychosilly metric assessment results present a picture of an individual embroiled in expansive relationship enlightenment and enrichment. This fan of the furry and four-legged likely has a proliferous prognosis of pedosis in the near future, until the flocculent features of her psyche have been psychomologically analyzed and exorcised. It is my considered conclusion that Miss Maureen Scanlon be prescribed no less than a 45 milligram SF subfurricular dose of fur azaline and a 2300 milligram ED extradogular dose of pet oxycin for accumulation of relationship connecting cognitions. Jung A. Todd, guest shrinkstigator, Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Grab some of this episode's guest merchandise, specially designed to help keep this episode's message top of mind in your life. Don't forget friends and family members who could use an Art Lab mental boost too. Just go to therapybites.myshopify.com.
Hey, T-Ballers, thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team. Next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Burger King leadership myths: how to lead without having it your way in relationships, business and life. Who doesn't like having it your way? I know I do. But a slogan that works for a burger joint isn't really the best model for most relationships, and certainly not for real life. Life ain't Burger King, folks, and who doesn't like Burger King? Today's episode is for those seeking direction in their life. Maybe for you, that's a pathway out of the distorted thought creating depression in your life. Maybe it's the stinking thinking that continues to fuel a hidden addiction, or maybe an addiction that's not so hidden after all. Maybe you're at your wit's end about your business, or maybe you're tangled up in marital tussles and blind to which way is up. Join us today as we listen to today's guest who has experienced what it means to lose seemingly everything, and that includes business to bankruptcy, family to divorce, and self-concept to the point of trying to even take his own life. We're going to fast forward from that dismal picture to our guest's present life after he learned to leap those hurdles, heal those hurts, and turn those boulders of life weighing him down into stepping stones across mountains of self-doubt and despair to become both a leader in his own life and a trainer of other leaders as well. Join us coming up next.
Government legal gobbledygook. Therapy Bites is not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, not, endorsed, not, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. SOAP for short. Warning. Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming beliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
Yeah, with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead, don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.